Meeting will come to order. How's our mics working this morning? Can you hear me okay? Good deal. Thanks, Mike. Well, thank you for coming in on a beautiful spring Friday morning, folks. The committee administrator, when she returns, will note the roll. We're kind of working on the fly here for just a second, so pardon me while I take a breath. And the delete all amendment to House File 1140 that we're going to talk about this morning, I'm sorry, it's duplicating. It will be down momentarily, so we'll be pausing to talk about a few other things while we wait for that to get here so we can walk through it and digest it. We do have a quorum, so we could talk about the minutes for a moment. Do I have a motion on the minutes? Anyone?
So moved.
Representative Morrill, thank you for moving the minutes. Had a chance to look them over, members. Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Thank you. We have the minutes adopted. And Representative Paul Anderson has House File 976 up first today. Representative Anderson, you and your testifier ready to go? Good morning, Representative Anderson.
Good morning,
thanks
Mr.
for being
Chair.
Here. I'll ask someone to move House File 976, and we're going to lay this one over for inclusion in the policy bill. Because it has no fiscal notes, so if I could get a motion from someone to move that, Representative Vogel.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Vogel, for putting the bill in front of us. Representative Anderson, would you like to explain House File 976 for us?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Good morning to the members of the committee. This issue was brought to me by the Township Association and also affects a couple of townships in my home county. And what happened, there's state statute that says that townships have to levy that 0.04835 of their total taxable market value in order to in their road and bridge account to qualify for the gas tax distribution that comes back from the state. And at least in one of these townships' case, what happened is they have quite a bit of lakeshore in their township, and as a result, their taxable market value was increased rather substantially. And as an example, this past year, to meet this threshold of 0.04835, they would have had to have levied $114,000 in their road and bridge account. They didn't need that much in their account. They wound up levying about $52,000 instead. And as a result, they did not qualify for this distribution back from the state. And these two townships together lost about $65,000 into their accounts because of this provision. And we'd like to just have a change to reflect that what they get, they have to levy at least that amount in the previous year to qualify for this distribution in the calendar year. And with me is a representative from the townships to further talk about this measure.
Representative Anderson. Could have kept talking for just another moment.
But I didn't see you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Solem, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the folks listening at home and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kent Solem, General Counsel with the Minnesota Association of Townships. And thank you for considering inclusion of 976 into your omnibus bill. As Representative Anderson has stated, we have this arbitrary formula that's in the current statute. And over the years, it's become an increasing problem in his district because of the increasing value of the lakeshore. We had a township last year that was trying to do the right thing. They had set aside money to buy a new piece of road equipment. The equipment came in cheaper than they had anticipated, so they had a surplus. They thought, well, in this economic time, we should keep our levy down. And their thanks for keeping the levy down was being penalized by not getting their share. This is what our folks commonly refer to as the gas tax distribution. It's broader than just the gas tax, but that is the bulk of the funding, and it is constitutionally dedicated for these purposes. So it is the money that's intended for these for the road purposes. The way that we're trying to restructure it is that that they have to at least match the amount coming from the gas tax, the highway user safety account. So it isn't free money. It still requires the townships to put in their share of the levy for the road maintenance. But rather than having an arbitrary increase to your property tax, that has no bearing whatsoever on road expense or road costs. This will make it tie directly to what our expenditures are, and it's just a more fair way of doing it. We are working with Mr. Burris on making a couple of tweaks to make it clear that it is the amount that they should have received in the prior year. And the reason for that is if you, we don't want to have a situation where they receive zero because of the current penalty, and then they only have to levy a dollar to get all the state money. We want it to be the equal match. And also, what happens if a township doesn't receive their share, that money then is redistributed among all the townships in the county that did levy the .04835. So then they get a bonus for the year. And if we don't do the tweak we're working with Mr. Burris on, those townships would actually have to levy higher than intended. So he's working on language that will be for the omnibus that makes it clear that it's the amount that should have been distributed as opposed to the actual dollar distributed. With that, I'll be happy to stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Sulem.
If I may, Mr. Chair, I just want to also make it clear this in no way changes the actual dollar amounts coming into the county, does not change the distribution of the actual monies that make up the account that is our share. It's just how we qualify for what is already our share.
Understood. Thank you. Questions for the testifier or the author? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Sulem. So if a county or a township doesn't qualify for this money, where does that money go? Does it just stay in there, or does it get distributed to equally out to everybody else that qualifies?
Mr. Sulem?
Yes, Chair, Representative Nelson. The money that comes into the county for the townships is set by combination of the Constitution and state statutes, and we're not touching that. So the money comes into the county to be shared to the townships. The townships that fail to levy under current law the adequate amount, they forfeit their share, and then that amount is redistributed among all the townships that did levy the proper amount. So those townships get a bonus in the year that their neighbors failed to levy the proper amount.
Follow up, Representative Nelson. Members, Representative Nelson asked a good question, and one that I remember worrying about all the new members on the committee, whether you would grasp the complexities of the formula. And hopefully in your save file you have a sheet that looks like this. It's sort of an org chart that looks like a plate of spaghetti. It actually has the trail and the percentages and how things flow out of the highway user tax distribution fund, including the town road account and kind of delineating into percentages and so on. Follow up, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm just trying to think this through. So a township that has high value property that maybe has gone up and chooses not to levy and for that, in effect, like they would be getting this money. They would be getting their share of the money anyway, but lower value townships in that county would then, I mean, in some ways it looks like it could be subsidizing, lower value townships could be subsidizing or transferring money, having to levy or subsidizing these wealthier subdivisions. I guess I'm just trying to get my head around that, and I guess that's maybe a question.
Actually, a correction. This note, the chart that was handed out earlier this year was also handed out again today with your bill. My correction. Mr. Sulem or Representative, you have a response to that? Or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, the way that it's distributed to each township is dependent on the county having it what they determine to be an equitable distribution formula, and it takes into account a number of factors. So if you have a township that has a particularly low value, the county can take that into account when they're determining what share should go to each township. So there are some safety nets. MnDOT also has some rules. So it really doesn't work out to be a subsidy. It is an equity formula that the counties and MnDOT work out as to how it should go to each township based on road miles, based on population, all those factors. And we're not touching any of that.
Follow up?
The other way I think I'm looking at here is what would happen in a situation like with this, if there was a sharp drop in property. Now they're going to be required to do a maintenance of effort. That's almost what this is turning this into, because now I'm going to have to expend as much or more than what I spent last year, and if my property values drop precipitously, I would be required again to have this maintenance of effort that would be there instead of having, you know, lowering the amount that I have to put in as a township based on the value, market value of my property.
Mr. Solem?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson. The reason our folks didn't see that as a problem is that regardless of the market value, the cost of the road maintenance doesn't change relative to the market value. And so we know what our road costs are going to be based on the prior year's work, based on conversations with the contractors of what the next year's cost will be. So regardless of what the market value is, we know what our costs are, and we have to levy to cover those costs. And that's what the voters approve at the annual meeting. So if the market value crashed, the levy is still going to be what it has to be to cover putting in the filling the potholes, doing the grading, putting the chloride down, et cetera. So they feel it is the most equitable way to do it because it is tied to cost rather than just market value.
Representative Anderson, you care to respond?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a comment to that also. I don't think the other townships feel that they would be entitled to this extra money. In fact, there's been talk of having those townships pass resolutions, and if they do that, that they would give their bonus money back to the townships that really deserve this. And this is based strictly on needs for road and bridge maintenance, not so much in terms of high values for homes and lake shores. This is basically a road and bridge account.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Anderson, you might have been getting to my, I think it's a question more than a concern. I'm with you in theory here. I'm trying to think through, I think, some of the scenarios that Representative Anderson's talking about. And you've mentioned about giving back the windfall, because it seems to me that there could be townships that get a windfall, mm-hmm. and then they have to levy for that windfall amount the next year.
Yeah.
And it seems to me there could be an escalating or a cumulative effect that could be problematic as you go down the years. I understand this is a work in progress. I have to be honest, I haven't had enough coffee to work the math out in my own head this morning. So, Representative Anderson and Mr. Soon, what I would ask is, since this bill is going to be laid over, could you provide some maybe runs or scenarios to the committee so that we could understand that a township wouldn't find itself under a growing burden if it has to keep matching the previous year, if some townships don't get their money and some townships get the windfall, or you do something to prevent the windfall on the front end?
Mm-hmm. Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Morrow. We could have gone about this in two ways. We chose to do the one where you had to have some skin in the game. The other way we could have approached this was to just eliminate this 0.04835, because the county actually does set the formula for this refund. It's done at the county level. So in a sense, this requirement of that 0.0485 is really a redundancy. So, but I can get those for you.
Representative Morrow, follow up.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, that was going to be my second question was, Mr. Soolam, since the counties set the formula, could we not leave it to local control in the counties to determine, or are the townships uncomfortable with having the counties do that? I'm not trying to set you up. I'm really asking an honest question. Could we just not leave it to the counties, as Representative Anderson's suggesting?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, our folks would be fine if you would prefer just to strike the 0.0485 and leave it, because we're not changing the part of the statute that says the county determines what's equitable, and then there would be no minimum levy. Like I said, the reason it was put together this way was that there was concern that people would think we were just getting free money, and that's not the case. This is dedicated account. It is meant to come to us anyhow, but it was trying to show that we are willing to put in a match. So that the committee would prefer the simpler to strike the 0.04835. We would have no opposition to that.
Follow-up, Representative? Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, I'm assuming we'll do that before you determine whether this goes in the bill, but I would be interested in MnDOT's view, whoever writes these formulas and administers them. I mean, the unintended consequences, I think, are the kinds of things we want to avoid. What do other local units of government see as unintended consequences? And so I would hope we'd get some clarity of that before this would go into an omnibus bill. And then the other is an observation. Though we talk a lot here about reform, I read recently, again, we have more units of local government than virtually any other state, and these are sacred cows, and we never touch them. The numbers of units, and when you have an issue like this, I think it just helps us understand when you're dealing with formulas and many units of local government and the interaction between them. There's a lot of cumbersome bureaucracy around that.
There certainly is. This is, I think, indicative of our culture, our prairie populist roots, and it's something we work with and celebrate and struggle with all the time. And this is why we have meetings and chat these things through. Good point, Representative Hausman, that this is going to be laid over for possible inclusion. It does not have a fiscal note. It could go in a policy bill next month. It is possible there might be an amendment. Do I understand correctly, Representative Anderson? And if I'm telling tales out of school, forgive me, that might have a fiscal note, but it doesn't appear so. So there is a little time to let this percolate a little further, and but you raised good points we need to consider.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Sulem.
To Representative Hausman's comments, I have had some email exchanges with Mr. Jonas at MnDOT, who I know is not currently available. I don't know who else from MnDOT could speak, but he and Mr. Jonas and I have spoken about this many times over the last several years because of the calls that they get, and there was no opposition coming that through any of those email exchanges I've had with MnDOT. Also, I have spoken with Mr. O'Connor from the County Association, who had talked with the county engineers, and he informed me that they had no opposition to this effort.
Thank you. Further questions or comments before we move this one over for possible inclusion? Seeing none, the chair will declare that we are going to lay this over for possible inclusion. We still don't have the delete all amendment here quite yet. So, well, I'll tell you what. Members, what we're going to do here is, before I declare a brief recess so we can absorb what we're about to be handed to us, I'm going to ask the, let's just take one down and pass them around here. Don't break into song right yet tomorrow. I'm going to ask the committee's will on this next issue that I'm going to pass around here because, you know, as committees with jurisdiction, sometimes we can ask to see things that are in other committees. One that's been presented to me is this note that's coming around now right behind the donuts here. It's about whether or not two license plates and where they have to be located on a vehicle is something that merits coming to this committee for policy consideration, or whether we can just let our friends over in Public Safety Committee or Judiciary Policy and Finance handle this issue. So when you've all had a moment to see it, we'll talk about whether or not we want this to come this way. While you're contemplating that, let the chair thank Representative Morrow for the nutrition he provided this morning. I think Representative Morrow heard a rumor that I mentioned donuts three times on Monday. Thought he was on to something, so thank you for the effort, Representative Morrow, for the Krispy Kremes. Yeah. Well, members, now that you've had a moment to see it, is this something that you think the chair should ask for in front of this committee, or should we let it move? Seeing no one reaching for their microphones, Representative Morrow.
Well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate you asking us this question, and it's that is generous of you. And just trying to think through, and I know we have some folks in the audience who would maybe give us some guidance as well, but since this is really, I think, a jurisdictional or a committee question, and I know that Representative Szymanski, I think, for one, has a bill regarding license plates for motorcycles and disabled drivers. Mm-hmm. It seems that we deal a good deal with DPS and DVS, and it seems like it affects both. We've come down this road before. On the other hand, I don't know that we want to become the license plate committee. And so I would be concerned because I think we could be inundated with license plates generally. And I think Representative Nelson was telling us about the wisdom of Representative Leader and following Representative Leader's guidance. So on the whole, just to maybe give you some feedback, I don't feel strongly either way. Maybe Representative Szymanski does. But in general, if I had to vote, I'd probably vote that no, I don't feel this needs to come before us.
Thank you, Representative Moore. Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also serve on the Judiciary Committee, and looking at this, I don't feel that it would be essential to be heard here in the Transportation Committee.
Well, thank you. The chair didn't feel a compulsion to do so either, but before he says anything else, he'll call on Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't feel one way or the other strongly, but at the other on the other side, do we want to set a precedent? Because in my years here, we've all always heard the license plate and special license plates, and if we don't hear this, is this setting a precedent for later legislators as a way to bypass our committee for these issues?
And I'm sorry, if I should follow up, and I'm trying to remember, maybe staff, maybe Mr. Burris or Ms. Zewers can help me out. I seem to remember we had a discussion about, in essence, delegating this decision on just license plates generally, and I thought that was either a commission or maybe it was the State Patrol specifically, that we had set up, or at least the representative leader had talked about, some criteria. I don't know if there was the bond and the like, but the and then this, I thought maybe it was public safety, was going to make license plate decisions moving forward. I don't recall whether, A, whether we actually enacted that, or B, what the extent of that was, so I think I'd have to turn to our
discussion, and I don't think we ever did have a committee decision clearly on what we were going to do, except we talked about having some sort of a license plate policy that got us away from that stuff. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I do appreciate your consulting with the committee about this. That's really great. And But I'm a little... I'm of the mind that Representative Nelson is. I mean, Representative Leader really hated these things, and I don't think he even heard most of them. If he did, it was very, very reluctantly. But because this is, there are issues with MnDOT, it's certainly under our jurisdiction. I don't think it's these kinds of bills should be encouraged. You always have the option to hear them or not hear them, but as much as I don't like committee time spent with this, it does seem that jurisdictionally, if we don't see them before the committee, there should be, as Representative Morris suggested, some other kind of alternative mechanism, or at least the agencies in question are consulted and we know their opinion, particularly if there are some financial or other issues related to these things. So
The chair is getting an idea here from your discussion concerning jurisdiction and precedence, and I'm taking the advice. Representative Hausman.
Well, I was just noticing that some members of the audience who are from those jurisdictions seem to be seeing this for the first time and reading it, and that would concern me that other committee hasn't consulted with the relevant jurisdictions. At the very least, I would hope you might connect with the departments to see again whether there's a point of view that we haven't thought of.
And it occurs to me while we're chatting that this is not on the agenda. This is not official public business. It's more or less committee chatter because I'm soliciting your input. To explain to the members of the public what we're talking about is there's a bill, House File 440, that Representative Smith has. It actually doesn't deal with specialty or vanity plates. It deals with commercial vehicles, whether they should display one or two license plates and where on the vehicle those plates should go. So this isn't about special plates. It's about location of plates on certain commercial vehicles, as I understand it. And that's something that has always started in the jurisdiction of the transportation policy and then gone up through the chain of command. So let me contemplate this, members. We won't make a decision here this morning, but this strikes me as a policy issue, and we have time on deadlines for that. And I'm sensitive to the comments of all of you. Thank you about jurisdiction, about precedent. And yes, Representative Morrow, I'm also aware that if we hear one, will the floodgates be opened on there's about six or seven specialty license plate bills out there floating around in the ether. And we'll do our best to consider whether or not to hear those as well. Thank you, members, for your input on that issue. And again, thank you for the treats, Representative Morrow. Now, you just had about a 40-page amendment dropped on your desk, the DE. Representative Hornstein, would you mind if we declared, say, like about a 7 to 10-minute recess so we could kind of look this over?
Sure. Absolutely.
Do that? Members, I'm going to declare a 10-minute recess. Well, we'll make it 12, so we're back here at the quarter past the hour. And I'll be at the witness stand explaining the 11:40. We're recessed.
Okay, so we're not.
Yes.
And now it's all in the.
Yeah. Well, I think on that one, he doesn't have that.
I was trying to figure it out. Well, here's taking through the long-term. Basically turning this into an MOE.
Hey, Ryan?
But my point is that we're taking it from something that's tied to that market value. You're turning into an MOE. Your property values drop. Now you're stuck.
That's one of the complaints that we're hearing about MOEs.
Well, I know. And, and so they're going to have to raise property taxes on everybody.
Yeah.
Because the value went down. I've got this locked in. $1 million.
Right.
And if I don't need to spend $1 million, I still got to spend $1 million.
Yeah. Do they not put the air in it?
Thank you.
Chair, I'll call the meeting back to order. Members and guests, at the chair's discretion and after consultation with members on both sides of the desk and the author, we're going to have Representative Holberg, we're going to amend the agenda to take House File 1196 and 1197, Chief Author Representative Holberg, first. Before we do the 1140 and the delete all amendments, since these two bills do have material impact on the 1140 bill. So let's start with House File 1196, and there are folks I know who would like to testify. Members, let's let Representative Holberg do a brief walkthrough of the bill or explanation of the bill. She'll stand for questions, and we'll ask folks who want to testify for or against the bill. Representative Holberg, thank you. Welcome to the committee. If someone would like to move House File 1196, move it to lay over for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill.
I'll move Representative House File 1196, Mr. Chairman, for possible inclusion in the omnibus. Did you say the omnibus bill that you wanted to do that?
Bill, yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative Leidinger. Chair Holberg, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. The House File 1196 that's in front of you, it's probably not going to be everybody's favorite bill of the day. It's an attempt to address some of the financial considerations before the state, looking at the deficit and trying to balance the needs of the state and assure that transit operating has the necessary funds to keep operating. As many of you are aware, a number of years ago there was legislation that passed that allowed metropolitan counties, actually statewide counties, could raise sales tax for transit costs, and five of the seven metro counties, all but Scott and Carver, chose to levy the tax and formed the CTIB board, the County Transit Improvement Board, and are taking in revenues off of that funding source each year, and this bill would take some of that revenue and require that CTIB grant money to the Met Council for the purpose of operating subsidy of the Metropolitan Transit bus system. As you'll see on, let's see, page 2 of the bill, lines 35 and 36, we have a blank appropriation amount, and we're working on balancing other target figures across the state budget at this point, and the maximum amount over the two-year period that we're looking at would be about $69 million, but we're working today and over the weekend to try and balance our target numbers across the state budget, and we'll come in Monday. It is my understanding you're going to begin to mark up your bill on that day, and we would have hard numbers and would lose the terminology of at least and put in a dollar amount.
Thank you, Chair Holmberg, for the explanation.
And I understand there's quite a number of people here to testify against the bill.
I was hoping there'd be someone for it as well. I'll take all comers. Brief questions for Representative or Chair Holmberg before we hear from testifiers. Seeing none, I do have one name on the list. I will hold the chair open to the testifier chair for others who may want to speak directly and respectfully to the bill. Chair Peter McLaughlin from the County Transportation Improvement Board. Commissioner McLaughlin, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Peter McLaughlin. I'm chair of the county's Transit Improvement Board. There are county commissioners from that board here from both Ramsey and Dakota County this morning. And our position is that this is a very bad bill for a number of reasons, and I want to give you three, if I could, Mr. Chairman and members this morning. It's obviously bad for transit, because it's eating the seed corn. That's what the sales tax was supposed to be, seed corn for expansion of the transit system, both capital and operating. We would argue that it's bad for roads because it diverts funds that will generate federal match that will help solve transportation problems in corridors. And those transportation problems, if they're not solved by transit, will have to be solved by road investment. And so we believe that these two, roads and transit, work together, and by cutting off in a major way the investment in expansion of transit, it's going to put an increasing burden on highways and the gas tax, which is dedicated to roads in this state, and we've supported increases in gas tax and support that. So that's a problem there. And we think that if the transportation system doesn't work, that's bad for the economic competitiveness of the Twin Cities and the entire state of Minnesota. We need an efficient, effective transportation system to stay competitive, to move workers, and to move materials, and that it's not just the people riding transit that we're talking about here, because moving people off the roads into transit leaves space on the road for workers trying to get to work and the trucks that move materials and finished goods that we need to get to market. That's why the Minnesota Chamber, the Twin West Chamber, the St. Paul Chamber, the Greater Minneapolis Chamber, and the Minnesota Chamber all supported the quarter-cent sales tax when it was before the legislature, when it was enacted. There is a 9-to-1 return to the state of Minnesota for capital dollars that the state invests in these new transit projects. Straight up, $5 of federal money for every dollar the state puts in, $4 worth of county money that goes in for every dollar that the state puts in. There is also a notion here that inference may have been left that we're not paying for operating costs now. That is not the case. In fact, this year, the county's Transit Improvement Board, the sales tax, the money you're talking about, will contribute $13.4 million to the operation of Metro Transit's four main transitways, 35W, Cedar Avenue Busway, North Star, and Hiawatha. And the projections in the out years here in the coming biennium would be that we would be contributing in excess of $15 million of existing CTIB funds in each of the next 2 years. Second reason this is a bad bill is it breaks faith with the people of Anoka, Dakota, Hennepin, Ramsey, and Washington County. Now, we understand that the state makes the rule, that we are creatures of the state. The five counties did follow the rules that the state imposed. And those rules for the quarter cent sales tax said that the money had to be invested in transit and expansion, both on the capital and operating side. Again, the state's got the power to change those rules. I would argue it's pretty bad business for the state to interfere with the relationship between local governments and the taxpayers in those jurisdictions. And that's what this would do. It would change the rules, seize money that was meant for expansion to solve the state's budget problem. That's not what the money was there for. That's not what the bargain with the residents of our counties was about. So they're breaking the promise that was made to the people of those counties. It's also a special problem, I believe, because we're talking about Metro Council. That's a seven-county operation, and I understand there's some language in there that says that the money can only be used in the five counties where the money came from. But frankly, the color of money to Met Council is kind of immaterial, and the Met Council provides. In the two counties that don't pay the tax, they're providing dial-a-ride service, they're providing metro mobility service, they're providing regular route service in the two counties that don't pay the sales tax. And so there is a fig leaf there that says, well, you can't use any of the money in those two counties. But that, I think, people, if they look at it in a fair way, is really a fig leaf, in fact, and that the color of money really doesn't matter. So the other two counties are going to benefit, and they don't pay their taxpayers don't pay the tax. Finally, it's a bad idea because it impairs contracts between CTIB and Hennepin County, which issued bonds on behalf of CTIB in late 2010. The sales tax, 99.25% of the sales tax was pledged to Hennepin County for repayment of these bonds. Hennepin County then made representations to the people to whom we sold bonds that there was this pledge. And this would interfere with the financial integrity of those bonds and impairing those contracts. And we think that that's a bad idea, not only for Hennepin County. And we care about our AAA credit rating. We care a lot about it. We're AAA across the board, all three rating agencies, because we think it saves the taxpayers money. But it's also going to raise questions in our mind. Anybody buying bonds from the state of Minnesota, anybody buying bonds from a city or another county or school district, because they would see that the state was interfering in contracts that the bondholders have entered into in buying bonds sold by local governments or, in this case, local government in the state of Minnesota. That's really bad for the state of Minnesota. It's bad for a local government. It's going to cost taxpayers money. And it's really a slippery slope that this legislature ought not go down. And so for those three reasons, bad for transit, transportation, and Minnesota's economic competitiveness, bad faith with the people of the five counties whose funds are being taken, and bad for taxpayers all over Minnesota because of the shadow this action would cast on future bond issues. For those reasons, we think this is a bad idea, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to stand for questions.
Thank you for your testimony, Commissioner. Is there questions or comments for the Commissioner?
I'll stop the question.
Representative Holberg, you care to have any a brief or succinct response?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think we're going to have a whole parade of people, so we might as well just get it over with.
Well, Mr. Commissioner, I did make notes of your concerns and I have several comments to make, but we'll be back with this again on Monday. And I think I'll hold my comments till that time. But thank you for expressing them clearly and succinctly. It is appreciated by the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mayor Hovland, I'm sorry, you were actually first on the list, and I'm sorry I missed your name. But Mayor Hovland, please come down and testify.
Sure.
And welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Mr. Chair, my name is Jim Hovland. I'm the mayor of Edina. I'm also the GEARS representative, the Grant Evaluation and Ranking System committee member for South Hennepin County. I'm also co-chair of the Regional Council of Mayors. A couple of concerns that we wanted to express here, Representative Holbert. Nice to see you again.
Thanks.
And I've seen you, Mr. Chair, I think two times in the last 10 days and heard the charge that you have in dealing with this, your portion of the budget crisis that we face, trying to find $60 million to patch a hole in the general fund out of the transportation fund, $2.4 billion budget that you have here. It's a daunting task. I hope I can give you a little bit of guidance and help as to whether looking in this particular area is a good idea or not. First of all, I don't think any of the members of the committee have in front of them, with respect to House File 1196, a complete copy of the statute that's involved here, which is 297A.992. And I think if you look at it, Section 5H, which is what's proposed for modification, I think that statute, that portion of the statute, contemplates a one-time contribution at the time this authorizing legislation was put in place. The reason I say that, and that language is notwithstanding the provisions of the subdivision in fiscal year 2009 of the initial revenue collected under this subsection, this section, the Joint Powers Board shall allocate at least $30,783,000 to the Metropolitan Council for Operating Assistance for Transit. The reason I think it's clear that this is supposed to be or was anticipated to be a one-time contribution is if you look at Subdivision 12, you might make a note on that, which I don't know if all of you have. It involves grant awards to the Metropolitan Council. That particular language says any grant award under this section made to the Metropolitan Council must supplement and must not supplant. That language is mandatory. Must not supplant operating and capital assistance provided by the state. I think it could be interpreted that this is a bill that would supplant some of the funding. Secondly, I think based upon the expectation of a one-time contribution, plans were made for 2009, 2010, 2011, and beyond. If you remember, this quarter cent sales tax is collecting about $85 to $90 million a year. The first couple of years, CTIB operated on a pay-as-you-go basis, but because of the increased demands for transit in the five-county area for 2011, GEARS and then CTIB approved grants totaling about $143 million. So they went into the bonding business to do some borrowing based on the creditworthiness of Hennepin County to accomplish what they needed to accomplish here. I think the notion of removing any funds that are committed, putting the five counties, the CTIP board, in a position where they have to figure out how to come up with this additional revenue that might be diverted, would be inappropriate. So those are kind of the main points I wanted to make. I don't want you to affect the creditworthiness of Hennepin County. I think that's something to be very concerned about. And then the basic equity issue, I think it was raised by Commissioner McLaughlin, that the legislature authorized the counties to join the CTIP board. It was five counties that actually joined together, agreed to levy a quarter cent sales tax, not the state. And the basic equity issue here, I think, would be let them run their operation. There may be another day for a broader discussion based on the legislative auditor's report as to what the MPO ought to look like in this region. You and I, Mr. Chair, have had conversations about that within the last 10 days. But I think I would go very cautiously and carefully with respect to this particular request regarding diversion of funds to help patch that hole in the general fund. Thank you very much.
Mr. Mayor, thank you for your comments and for your raising your concerns about the creditworthiness of Hennepin County. Member questions or comments for Mayor Hovland? Thank you, Jim.
Thank
you. Appreciate
it.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify for or against the bill? Mr. Shetland. Good morning, Mr. Shetland.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Judd Shetland. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. Appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning. I'm here to testify against House File 1196. The council supports the governor's position on the funding of transit in the metropolitan area. We view our partners at CTIB as critical partners in order for us to promote and move forward with the vision we have laid out in our transportation policy plan for the metropolitan area. We believe those dollars were created for the promotion of the of transitways within the metropolitan area, and we feel that that is the appropriate use for those. And again, we support the governor's position on this and would appreciate the committee's support.
Thank you, Mr. Shetland. Thank you. Members, comments or questions for Mr. Shetland? Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to testify for or against the House File 1196? Ma'am? Welcome to the committee. If you'd please identify yourselves for the members, that'd be great.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Nancy Schuweiler. I'm a Dakota County Commissioner, Chair of our Legislative Committee, and I am a member of the County's Transit Improvement Board Authority. And I just want to speak to, at this time, Mr. Chair and members, about Cedar Avenue BRT and the transit, that why we needed it, and what this bill could do to that project. Cedar Avenue has 1.5 lanes to meet capacity carried by the bus rapid transit. It feeds traffic coming out of two of the largest growing cities in the state, Farmington and Lakeville. Part of the need for this transit, not only is the congestion along Cedar, but the fact that the Cedar Avenue Bridge cannot be expanded to the width required to meet the amount of congestion expected. Bus rapid transit will help relieve that congestion, keep the bridge the size that it is, and meet the demands of not only the commuters going in to work in the downtowns, but also to the goods that are being transported. CTIP sold the bonds so that we could do this orderly planning, so that we could issue contracts to maximize the use of federal funds. And we have these contracts in place where we need to meet the terms of those contracts. And but for the funds that we have in place through the bonding, it's very likely that the counties, through the County's Transit Improvement Board, would have to go out and do some bonding and to raise the money in order to pay back the bonds that we've already raised. So I think it's kind of a domino effect to the counties in trying to maintain the contracts that we have in place in order to meet those obligations and to fund the projects as we have committed.
Commissioner Showalter, thank you, and I'm sorry I didn't recognize you when you came to the podium, or didn't recognize you visually. Thank you for your comments. Members, are there questions or comments for Commissioner Showalter? Showalter, right?
Thank you.
Seeing none, thank you, ma'am.
Thank you
for your comments, sir. Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the committee, that'd be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Jim McDonough, Ramsey County Commissioner, and I represent Ramsey County on the County Transit Improvement Board, and this morning I'm going to speak in opposition to this. As everybody's well aware, we're within weeks of a full funding grant agreement for Central Corridor, which would obligate the federal government to bring $456 million into our community to help with the build-out of that line. We're moving forward right to now today. There is actually construction going on that line. There are people working on that line right now today. A part of that funding process, CTIB has made a commitment of $106 million this year to meet the part of the local share for that federal funding. The agreement on the local share would be 30% comes from CTIB, 10% comes from Ramsey and Hennepin County, and 10% comes from MetCONCER through the state of Minnesota. That $106 million commitment is over higher than what we collect in a year. So that's what's triggered us to move forward on bonding for our commitment. So the total commitment that CTIB, I believe, will end up making is close to $270 million, I think. $106 million of that has been committed for this year. So I think I want to make sure that you have a clear sense of the understanding when we start talking about taking revenue that's been dedicated for a source, and then we've been forced to move forward to actually move into bonding, which the bond ratings working through Hennepin County have taken a look at that dedicated revenue source as a dependency to pay for those bonds, and then the problems that that will cause not only for Central Corridor, potentially for the full commitment of that, but then how the bond rating agencies will continue to look at us as a community about revenue that's expected to be there to pay for these bonds. Thank you. Any questions? I certainly...
Thank you, Commissioner McDonough. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a request. I think you're also a newly appointed member of a regional business body. That's what I seem to have heard, yes. And I hope you take a message back to them. I agree with all of the points that Commissioner McLaughlin laid out, but one specifically, that this whole move away from this direction to the future is bad for the economic competitiveness of the region. And every business group knows that, and they have all been there. But they are not here this morning. They are not here at any of these hearings. And that voice has got to be present. The business voice, the biggest business leaders support light rail, commuter rail, intercity passenger rail, because they understand the need for that piece as part of the economic competitiveness of the region. But their voice has got to be here. They have got to weigh in now at this very pivotal point.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, we couldn't agree more. We recognize that Hiawatha, North Star Central, moving forward on the transportation bill that the state gave the authorization for the counties to impose the quarter cent sales tax, none of that would have happened without business support and business leadership.
Thank you for your comments. Further questions or comments for Commissioner McDonough? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further testifiers would like to speak for or against the proposal 1196. Representative Moore.
I'm sorry, got another one.
While this gentleman's coming, you have a
That'd be okay. I think it's just to kind of close the loop. Representative Holberg, good to see you way over there. Representative Holberg, I'm looking at Representative Szymanski, and I know we share some Greater Minnesota Transit service between our two districts. And just for all of us who get a little lost in the complexities of transit funding, as a Greater Minnesota Transit advocate and one greatly concerned with Greater Minnesota Transit, are there implications, direct or indirect, in your bill upon funding for Greater Minnesota Transit?
Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair and Representative Morrow, I don't know all the intricacies of Chair Beard's bill. The general fund dollars that we're talking about in the base funding are Met Council general fund dollars. And I don't know, certainly I don't believe that Chair Beard's bill touched the MVES, the 4% to Greater Minnesota Transit, but I've missed you guys. I haven't been on the committee this year, and I just can't answer that question.
Representative Morrow.
Well, Representative Chair Beard, then of course I'm going to be asking you the question whether it's now or on Monday. I tend to agree with Representative Hausman about having a statewide transit vision rather than, I'll use the word balkanized version, in which Greater Minnesota Transit doesn't meet needs, opt-ins might be treated more favorably, Met Transit's in a third. So I'm going to ask you, you don't have to answer it right now, you can let it percolate, but I'd like to hear from you when we're passing provisions in the omnibus bill or adding provisions, I'm going to keep asking, what is the implication, direct or indirect, on Greater Minnesota Transit?
Noted, and when we come up here in a few minutes and have my delete all, you'll see what our original intention was, and I will assert at that time that the continuation of that effort to hold everyone proportionally is going to be the thrust. But thank you for the question. Someone was coming here. Sir, thank you for the brief interlude. If you'd come up and testify, that'd be great.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Dave Van Hedem. I'm with Transit for Livable Communities. We obviously oppose this bill, and we appreciate, in the larger context, you setting up a public hearing on Monday. We expect to have a number of folks here to testify on the importance of both keeping our existing bus system operating, our existing bus and transitway system operating, but growing a regional system of transitways. We've spent a lot of time looking at that system, and our system is not a large one compared to regional peers. And we're convinced that having an effective transit system is a key component of economic development. I just want to note a couple things. One, our transit system is run extremely effectively. That was found by the Legislative Auditor's Report, and we know that's true with CTIP's operations. But as I watch these committee hearings, I frequently see transit talked about quite separately from roads. We have Met Transit at the table of Met Council, then we have MnDOT, but I encourage you to take a close look at the Metropolitan Highway Investment Study. This was a joint study by MnDOT and the Met Council that looked at towards the future how we're going to deal with very costly congestion in our region. And it concluded that there's some clever ways to do that on the roadside, but we better be also thinking about transit and making those investments. Secondly, in terms of the economic development return from transit, the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials, as I've shared before, said every dollar invested returns over $6 in economic return. What I didn't share previously is that number's higher for roads, for transit than for roads, slightly higher. And I think that's the case where you have a very mature highway system, as we do in this metropolitan region. And then finally, again, looking to the future, the largest demographic of future home buyers, the Gen Yers of the world, they've been polled, and this was in the Wall Street Journal, that the kind of housing they're looking for does not create or include a dependence on automobiles. Now, I imagine that's probably, they're looking for maybe one spouse being able to use transit, but we hear this over and over and over. We have 10,000 members in the region. I used to work for 6 years with the employers and met with thousands and thousands of commuters, and consistently they tell us over and over they want more options, and that's what the polling is showing as well. So we believe that it's time to build a system while we maintain convenient options for those who rely on transit for a variety of reasons. And we believe there's other places to look for addressing the funding issues, and we'd be happy to elaborate on Monday.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Van Hedem.
Hedem.
Thank you. Questions or comments for this gentleman? Thank you. We'll look forward to that. Anyone else wish to testify for or against this bill? Seeing no one, Representative Holberg, would you like to do a brief wrap-up, and then we'll move to 1197?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and certainly this isn't an optimal solution given the budget challenges facing the state. I hope it's one that the committee will consider.
Thank you, and I'm sorry, Representative Hornstein had a question or comment.
Thanks. It's more of a comment, but perhaps Representative Holberg would want to respond. You know, members, I think this is as much about local control as it is about, you know, how we fund transit operations in the region. You know, the history of this legislation for CTIP, which I authored, was about having the counties and cities, the level of government closest to the people, take the political risk and the political challenge of levying a tax. And so they went through... at the legislature's enabling language. We didn't require this. We enabled them to do this. And they took the language of that provision and went through a public hearing process, went through a planning process, and took the political risk of levying a tax, because that's what they, as elected county officials, with assistance from cities who participate in this, ended up doing. The Met Council and the state did not want to do this. They did not want to do this, but the Met Council did agree to be partners, and as Mr. Shetton and said, they have been active and good partners with the counties on this. CTIB has done incredible work in just a couple of years. We heard testimony earlier this session, a couple of months ago now, I guess, all of the accomplishments, all of the projects that CTIB has been involved with. And then we look at the amount of money that they've been able to leverage, the federal money, which members, by the way, would be going to Denver, Salt Lake City, Charlotte. But it's coming here to grow and develop our economy. And so to the extent that I think we all agree that local control is a good thing, this completely undercuts and usurps that control. And so that's my concern primarily, in addition to, I think, this is, I think, not the best way to address the issue of the transit gap, but we'll be talking about that a lot more in the next couple of days. But Representative Holberg, what about that? I know that you're a strong believer in local control and government being as efficient as possible. We've heard from several testifiers that we're getting $9 back for every dollar spent here, and your county board had hearings. They took the risk here and are justifiably reaping the rewards as well. I just wanted your thoughts on that,
Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hornstein. I think that these are difficult times, and if you look at the enacting language, when this was put into place 2 years ago, the first $30 million off the top went to Met Council for the very purpose. Our economic conditions have not turned around. Some would say they're worse. And we're trying to find ways to keep funding going to transit. Is it optimal? No, but it's not unprecedented.
Thank you for your comments. Further questions, comments for the author of the bill? Seeing none, the chair will lay House File 1196 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill. Next bill on the agenda is House File 1197. Representative Holberg, this is also your bill. Members, if you have it in front of you, Representative Holberg, please explain House File 1197, and we'll talk about this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is basically a retread of policy that was put in place in the last biennium to allow some flexibility to the Met Council to use other funds of money for transit operating as necessary. In my conversations with Mr. Shetland from the Met Council, my understanding is that in this current biennium, they haven't used these tools, if you will, and so this would provide that flexibility into the next biennium should they need to use extra funds for transit. And there was testimony in the past that there are less requests or pressure for funding for the Livable Communities Program, given the economic conditions around housing and commercial development, et cetera. And so this would be permissive in nature and provide some flexibility to the Met Council.
Madam Chair of the Ways and Means Committee, author of the bill. As I'm reading the bill, I'm noticing a couple words that look like shall do, like on a line 1.19. I see shall, guys. 1.24 does say may. It may not, may. Okay, I just see the one shall in there. Can you explain the significance of transferring the funds on 1.19 from Livable Communities Demonstration Account to the Local Housing Incentive Account?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm sorry. You want the significance on the language on 1.9?
Yeah. Can we explain it today, or do we have to research it and explain it on Monday? We can do that as well.
That's current law.
1.9.
1.19. Because everything else is permissive in here, which is kind of what I'd hoped you were doing. But I do see one word that says shall. And if you can speak to it today, that's fine. If not, we'll speak to it Monday. I know this is.
Yeah, it was my intent that it be permissive in nature. So maybe Mr. Shetnan would want to comment, but it was not that it be mandatory.
Thank you. Mr. Shetnan, do you want to speak to this point now? I do have one.
And I don't. I'm assuming he's going to testify against the bill, too.
Mr. Shetnan, come down and either answer my question or speak to the bill. While you're here, just do whatever you need.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, my name is Judd Shetnan. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to this bill. Specifically to line 1.19, it says the council shall transfer the $1.5 million from the demonstration account to the local housing incentives account. Right now, we transfer $500,000 from the LCDA, or Livable Communities Demonstration Account, to the LHIA account. And what the House file does is have the council take an additional $1 million from that account and transfer it to the LHIA account. So that is a shall. So if this bill were to pass, the council would have to do that. I think that we would prefer to leave it the way that we handle that right now, but if Representative Fulberg is saying that she meant that to be permissive, we could certainly talk about that. On another note,
thank you. Your other testimony.
Yeah, if Representative Fulberg is done, I'd like to testify that the council does oppose this legislation. The council, and as she also mentioned, this is retreading previous legislation. And that legislation passed in 2009 with an expiration date of 2011. And the council agreed that we would stand by that by that expiration date. Representative Holberg also mentioned that there was an economic downturn at the time. I can tell you that the council is seeing a rebounding effect, and the use of these dollars is actually meeting the can meet the demand for them. In 2009, we did see a dip. However, we also at that time sent a letter to members of the House and Senate saying that those would be the last dollars in and that they are unrelated to transit, which we believe they are. And I know that folks from Metro Cities will come up and say the same thing. It was a I guess a bridge gap funding in case we needed it. However, the governor's budget funds transit at a level where we don't need these type of intervening measures, and for that reason, the council would oppose that.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Comments or questions for Mr. Shetnan? Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Shetnan.
You.
Todd Olson from Metro Cities. Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, my name is Todd Olson. I'm with Metro Cities. Thank you for giving me this opportunity this morning. On behalf of Metro Cities, I do want to thank the chair and the author for their willingness to work to try to solve the transit operating deficit. We do oppose this bill. We don't think this is the solution to use. As Mr. Shetnan alluded to, in 2009, this was used as a last dollars in, as he said, and we appreciate the work of Representative Hordenstein and yourself, Mr. Chair, on that conference committee to help ensure that that was the case. That was a difficult deficit to fill, and we appreciate the work that was done to try to avoid to use these dollars, and the council did a great job of avoiding doing so. We posed this in 09 for a couple reasons. One, we don't believe it's the proper use of the funds. It dilutes the transparency. It's actually levied by the Met Council to be used for this. And also, we thought it was a bad precedent to set, and now here we are again, 2 years later, looking to use these funds again. The Livable Communities Demonstration Account, it's a voluntary incentive-based approach to affordable housing development, brownfield cleanup, and mixed-use development and redevelopment. It's been widely accepted and is fully utilized by local communities. The awards for 2011, they awarded over $7.3 million of the $7.5 available. There was another one for $78,000 that was approved that had to be pulled back because the developer fell through. And there were also six other projects that didn't quite score high enough, but they are still in the pipeline working with the council and the developers to try to get the score a little higher so we can use these funds in the future for those projects. It's the only one of the only carrots the council has to use to help spur development. And of the $7.3 million they awarded this year, there were 26 grants awarded. 15 of those were for pre-development. So that kind of alludes to the point that there is new development on the horizon. It's coming. It's in the pre-development phase, but the economy is recovering. And as we felt in 2009, was when the economy is low, it's a bad time to take away this gap financing for economic development. And now we think, as the economy is recovering even more, we think this is the worst time when people are actually using these dollars, and there is demand.
Thank you, Mr. Olson, for your comments. And since you raised the point, I'm going to join you in tipping my hat to the Metropolitan Council for the fine job they did. I was honored to be on that conference committee in 2009, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I think the conference committee agreed to give the Met Council and Met Transit Operations three tools, a fare increase, access to these funds, and access to the right-of-way acquisition loan fund, which we made available, but as it turns out, through probably just brilliant and ingenious operation of the bus company, they did not have to use any of the three tools that we made available. So thank you for pointing that out. Members, comments or questions for Mr. Olson? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Olson. Is there anyone else that would like to testify for or against House File 1197? Seeing none, the chair will lay House File 1197. Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry about that. I just a couple of quick comments. I remember that conference committee well, Mr. Chairman. I think it was the first time I ever got a senator so mad that he gaveled the committee and adjourned it abruptly. Because I was stubbornly supporting this program, and Senator Murphy was a little, and Senator Rest, I think, were a little upset with me. But the reason that I was stubbornly supporting this program and will continue to do that is that this has had such a tremendous positive impact on our communities. I mean, this isn't just some kind of a theoretical program here. If you've been down to Burnsville and you've seen kind of their city center project, that was a result of a small but very meaningful livable communities grant that the city of Burnsville received. I think it's called the Heart of the City Project. Near where I live in southwest Minneapolis, just across the border in St. Louis Park, we had a bunch of vacant land, a few bars, and that was transformed into a thriving commercial and residential area called Excelsior on Grand. That project wouldn't have happened if not for $1 million of livable communities money that the Met Council granted. And I could probably recite, and the Met Council and others here, dozens of projects just like that that probably may not have ever come to fruition without this program. And so, like CTIB, livable communities is a relatively small pot of money, but it leverages tremendous resources in the private sector and other public sector funds. And so I think we have to tread very, very lightly when we start to, take one pot of money for another purpose. This is here for a very good reason. It's been in existence since 1995. Then-Senator Mondale, I think, was the chief author in the Senate and spearheaded this legislation through. So, like the previous bill, I strongly oppose it, and I think we should really be very, very careful about impairing and impeding these kinds of programs.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Representative Morrow?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, we all, members of the committee, received an email this morning, and there was something, Mr. Chair, that you said earlier that I'm going to respectfully question. I'll just stick with respectfully. You mentioned about maybe a goal you have in the budget that we're going to see in the delete all we're going to see in terms of doing proportional cuts. I'm going to ask you to at least consider alternative views on that. Certainly cuts can be proportional, but we could also look at proportional service, proportional hours available. We have all received an email from a disabled person in my district who would love to testify Monday. She can't get here. You'll see her letter in your inbox. To her, a proportional cut doesn't have the same impact upon her hours of service, availability of dial ride, or fares. And so when I hear Representative Holberg's bill, and I'm agnostic perhaps on the bill, and if I were going to be regional, always trying, like Representative Hausman reminds me, to be statewide and think about Minnesota, and I think Representative Hausman's right. But if there are efforts made in your delete all or in this bill or other places to ensure that Met Transit doesn't need to cut fares, I'm sorry, raise fares, cut service alike, I hope all the members of this committee keep in mind proportionality in terms of cuts is one way to measure how you fund transit. Fairness and equity in service and fares is another way to measure it.
Thank you for your observation. Thanks. Representative Holberg?
Thank you. Any comments? Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the committee's time and consideration this morning. You and I will continue to talk, and as I've said for years, the issues in transportation never seem to change. We struggle with them session after session with the same challenges, the same concerns, and it's kind of fun to be back for a while.
Thank you, Representative Holberg. Thank you for coming down this morning. Members, with that, the chair will lay over House File 1197, possible inclusion in an omnibus finance bill. Now the chair is going to declare like a two-minute recess while he goes and fills his coffee cup with water and hands the gavel to the vice chair, Representative Murdoch.
Are we recessing or keeping going?
Well, if you give me just a brief time to step to the minute.
Yeah.
You remember when the
I just want to know what we're going to be for all the time. We all know
Thank you.
Okay, if everyone would take their seats, we'll get back to work. Members, if you take your seats, we'll get back to work on the Transportation Committee here. Okay, next up we have Representative Beard with House File 1140.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'll move House File 1140 to be laid over for possible inclusion. In fact, members, this will be the bill that we will take up on Monday, is what we'll call the vehicle bill, that the delete all amendment will go into. Let me just briefly explain House File 1140, because it's policy, but it's policy that kind of affects some of the things that we've been talking about over the past couple months. This bill, pretty much in this form, passed the Senate last year. It passed the Senate last year. I will note that the most significant portions, in my opinion, are on page 2, at lines 2.26 on, particularly regarding a capital project request to the legislature for fixed guideway projects, whether this be light rail, commuter rail, passenger rail, PRT, busway, or anything like that. It will require levels of detail for basically what amounts to projections for the next 20 years of the capital repayment costs, the operations and the maintenance costs, the revenue projections, and the breakdowns for the same. That is the essence of House File 1140 as we move forward, and particularly as it fits into a larger discussion which will be taking place hopefully over the interim between now and next year and longer if we need, about how we respond to the recommendations of the Legislative Auditor's Report for a cohesive and comprehensive plan for transit in the larger Twin City area and indeed in the state of Minnesota. I think that having this kind of description for transparency and for detail for the taxpayers who are being asked to take on the debt for projects, and I think there are about a dozen of them that are under consideration now, brings a level of, I think, accountability and measure that may help future policymakers realize that some of these are probably not sustainable from an economic perspective going forward. And if they are, then they should rise to the top or go to the front of the line for consideration. Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to stand for questions on 1140 before I offer the DE amendment, which will be, I think, a separate discussion.
Okay, members, excuse me, cold here in my head and throat. Members, any questions for Representative Beard? Representative Hausman.
And this, just a comment, and the catch-22 is if we have a proposal for an operating stream, that particular proposal isn't able to be acted on because, of course, it might mean a revenue stream. Back in the transportation bill, I think all of those advocates for the transit piece knew that what we really needed was a half-cent sales tax. And at the time, in order to get the chamber's support, we lowered that to a quarter cent, and we've been dealing with that ever since. But now, in these 2 years environment, it is even less possible to even talk about a revenue stream that does just what you're saying, because you're right. This would be, in an ideal world, there would be a funding stream, a revenue stream for it. But we aren't able to propose or act on revenue streams.
Representative Beard, comments?
I note the comment, and there'll be a fascinating discussion and a good discussion, members, about what constitutes revenue streams. If we expand it to include increasing taxes to be part of that revenue stream, so be it. It just will be noted that that's what the expectation is, so that the folks who elect us to come here and debate these things know what our expectation is for including revenue for operating and maintenance of any governmental system that we're running, particularly in a transportation arena that we're looking at here. So thank you for the comments, and yes, that's noted.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that exact point, Representative Beard, I mean, I agree with you, and I don't philosophically have an issue with your bill and what you're trying to do, but my question is, why just single out transit? I think that, you know, there are issues with building road projects and tremendous expense of operating and maintaining roads, and which is, I know now from Ms. Zierer's 85% of our total transit budget, transportation budget. So why just, you know, this focus on these fixed guideway transit projects?
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman, actually, two comments to that, and this will be, again, part of a larger and I think very good discussion for us to have on a philosophical basis. From the transit perspective, certainly the users in this state, because the roads and bridges are largely user fee funded, have been built and paid for by the folks who are using them on their own with their own single occupant automobiles, their pickup trucks, their semis, whatever they use, the guideway system that's been built, the all-weather, all-terrain, hard-surfaced road system. Transit that uses those should be able to account for that portion. They're using an investment that's already been made. One reason this gentleman is so fond of BRT is that it takes very little modification of an existing infrastructure bought and paid for by other users, and I don't think I have a problem with that. Whenever we're building exclusive guideways for another purpose, for what I call government-supplied transportation services, that is another discussion that I think has a different dynamic, and it's one that we should have. And then we could revisit the whole issues of cartways to pathways and how we got to hard-surfaced all-weather roads that the government owns instead of private property people, or instead of it being owned in private property configuration, why it's owned as a public entity so that the users can pay and that everybody can have a hard-surfaced all-weather street somewhere through their neighborhood that connects us with the rest of the world. It makes us mobile, makes us connected, and makes us prosperous. That's a fascinating discussion, and we could go on at length about that. But
follow-up?
Just a quick comment, and I do like the term you used previously, that we'll have a fascinating discussion about this. And fascinating, maybe. But just a quick comment then, Mr. Chairman, we do need to move on, is that I think it's not simply user fees. I mean, we have property taxes, significant funding source for county and local roads. And so I think as part of the fascinating discussion, I do think that that's something that we ought to really look at, particularly in the context of your bill, because I think there is an important conversation to be had about long-term financing for road projects that are not exclusively user fee funded. So thank you for bringing this forward, and look forward to further conversation.
Hey, Representative Houseman.
And that would mean, I'm assuming, that the chair's advice to Representative House when he writes the bonding bill is not to include any general obligation bonding for local roads and bridges. If we're really funding them with user fees, we'll have to take that advice to him.
Noted. Noted. Mr. Chair, I'm prepared to offer the DE amendment to House File 1140. It would be the A110165 amendment.
Members, we have the amendment in front of us to get the bill in the order he wants it to be in. And all those in favor of the A11-165 amendment, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? Amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we're not going to vote on the 1140 today. That will come up on Monday, members, and will be the subject of our discussions on Monday. Thank you for putting the DE amendment on at this time. And I'll just take a brief walk through the changes. If I can just hit those highlights, because most of what is happening here is, if you look on page one of the DE amendment, the money's in the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, the Trunk Highway Fund. I believe the Kassaw Municipal State Aids, airports and so on are pretty much numbers that come right straight from the agency. Of course, transit assistance is going to be the only area where we have general fund money, and that's, of course, the general fund is the one that has the $5 billion or so deficit that we're struggling with in the legislature as a whole, and this division has been asked by the leadership to adjust its general fund target originally to the numbers that are in the DE amendment, which amounted to about a $60 million reduction in general fund spending, and to be replaced by, in my estimation, the $98 million increase in MVEST money that's being transferred into transportation purposes, which includes, of course, 60% of that money for roads and bridges to MnDOT and 40% to be divided among the transit operations of the Met Council and Greater Minnesota, being dispersed, of course, through MnDOT. You'll see on the there's a two-page handout that Ms. Zuber's put together for us. I'm trying to determine direct appropriation change items is probably the best place to start. There's not much to talk about in aeronautics, except that Mr. Roy is doing a very good job of keeping our 136 state airports in good order and keeping the fund balance in play instead of allowing a balance to build. He's continually investing in reconstruction projects and expansion projects, mostly in Greater Minnesota. And what you see in fiscal 2013, Ms. Sewers, remind me, is that the balance on hand, the cash flow that we keep on hand for cash flow purposes?
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, the $1.775 million is the balance remaining in the state airports fund in the 14-15 biennium. In the 12-13 biennium, it's a little bit higher than that.
Members, that's probably about as low as we can go there for cash flow purposes. By the time they move the federal money through and put it with the user fees that they live with down there, it's about a $70, $80 million a year biennium investment, and it isn't prudent to run much lower than that for cash flow purposes. Greater Minnesota Transit, the general refund reductions, you see there for the biennium, we're proposing originally $7.6 million. Actually, I think the net number is nearly $7.5 million. Again, that was to be backfilled with the increase in MVEST funds. The chair is proposing to take the commuter and passenger rail desks at MnDOT. That was $1 million in general fund. That will be eliminated. MnDOT can move that to the freight rail office, and anything that they need to do to interface with the federal government, in my estimation, can be handled through that desk. And I think you'll notice in the bill there's language that when that happens, they will notify this committee and its ranking members. The state roads account and agency services, there's no change from what the agency was looking for. The MetPont Council is the next biggest number to consider. The general fund, again, those are all general fund dollars coming out of the transit operations, and will be backfilled with the increase in MVEST funds. And public safety, Department of Public Safety, I'm proposing $1 million a year cut from that. Those are actually highway funds, and ship those to the agency for purposes of roads, bridges, maintenance, or safety improvements on the highway system. On the back side of the bill, you will notice that there are just a brief recap of the six or seven bills that we've heard for possible inclusion into the bill. And you'll notice that the only one is the the donor card, the $2 donation, a voluntary contribution, will have some increase the Department of Vehicle Services for accomplishing the purposes of the $2 checkoff for donor awareness. Vehicle transaction fees, this was the House bill. Represents an increase in revenue to Department of Vehicle Services of nearly $2 million a year. And it is the chair's intention, I believe on Monday, to have discussion that that will be dedicated to the MNLARS project and perhaps help reduce the $1.75 fee that they're asking us to extend the sunset on. Members, I'm sorry to do this to you, but on Monday we will have a different fiscal impact and another delete all, which will keep pretty much the dedicated funds will all be the same. We'll be having further discussions about some of the proposals that Chair Holberg teed up with you in the previous two bills that we heard when she is able, after her targets meeting with other leadership members this weekend, to actually put numbers in House File 1196, I believe it was. So we'll have more numbers, and as soon as we can post those will be posted, and we'll... we'll make those available for a thorough discussion on Monday.
Okay. Mr. Chairman? Representative Beard, Representative Merle has a question.
Just a quick question, Representative Beard. I know we're not going to start analyzing this in depth, but there was just a comment on the spreadsheet that I was just hoping you could elaborate a little bit on your thoughts. It's on the. It's actually the last item on the back side of the two-pager, and it says impact transit operating grants. And the next sentence says, additional MVEST funds granted to suburban transit providers.
Oh, yes.
I'm wondering about that. I'm wondering especially, you, as you might imagine, about the word additional.
Yes, thank you. As you know, the MVEST funds over the next 2 years are growing by about $98 million. Of the 40% that's of those funds that come in that are dedicated to transit, 36% go to the Met Council, 4% go to Greater Minnesota Transit. Are you still with me? Of the 36% that's going to the Met Council, there is a formula in place, and Ms. Zewers or Mr. Burris can remind us whether that's statutory or whether it's within the Met Council itself, that says there is a percentage of the Met Council's portion that goes to the opt-out providers. I believe there's nine of them, the ones that were referenced in the Legislative Audit Commissioner's reports. So as that money goes up, the amount of dollars that are actually going into the count, suburban transit providers will get more money over the next 2 years from their portion, and that's all they get. They don't get any general fund money for the opt-outs. It's all out of this MVET. This percentage of the 36% that Met Council gets is what the opt-outs get. Mr. Burris, or Mr. Chairman, if I could ask staff if I'm not explaining that correctly to maybe elaborate a little more clearly.
Certainly.
That could be helpful.
Certainly.
Mr. Chair and members, it is a statutory formula for allocation of the portion of MVEST that is for metropolitan area transit. So under that formula in statute, there are calculations for a portion going to the opt-outs, and the legislation includes a change to that formula. That formula is currently in statute, and the legislation contains a change. The delete all amendment contains a change to that formula. That is, members, on page 33 of the delete all amendment. That's section 15.
Thank you, Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chairman, I'm recalling this discussion now. So there was something about when MVEST was first dedicated and started to come over, there was a formula in place that set a percentage of it that went to the opt-outs. And now that new money is coming in beyond whatever that original amount was, 21-point-some percent of the total MVEST pool, there was there's discussion and disagreement between the opt-outs and Met Council over whether another formula, whether it applies to the whole pot of money that's coming to the Met Council or only to the original money that was coming in. And I'm trying to remember what this language does exactly. Members, I apologize. I will have that clear explanation on Monday. But it altered, it made clear in statute whether all the money was covered by the old rule or the new formula. That's the essence of it. And I'll have a more clear discussion with you on Monday about that.
Representative Hausman.
Just to clarify then, you're saying there's a debate right now between Met Council and the suburban opt-outs. Is this legislation weighing in on the side of the opt-outs in that debate by saying you do deserve more?
Mr. Chairman, there's been a debate between the opt-outs and Met Council since the day the opt-outs were first formed. I think that would be an accurate statement. I'm trying to recall whenever I asked this to be clarified whether there's actually an increase to the suburban opt-outs or whether it amounts to about a wash. I'm not clear. Again, I'll have that answer on Monday, and we'll speak clearly and directly to it.
And, Mr. Chair, if I could just to get the author's intent.
Certainly.
Is it the author's intent to help the opt-outs be assured of more funding as a result of this bill?
Mr. Chairman, I think the author's intent is that the money that comes in from MVEST is split uniformly as per the statutory language, all of the money, not just portions of it, the old portion, the new portion, and however that debate came down. That, if I recall, was the essence of the discussion, and it was a part of a larger discussion where there was a lot of things going on. My intent is that there's one uniform yardstick that's used to divide the pot of money. Don't be surprised if it perhaps yields additional money to the opt-outs if that's the case. That could well be, and I would not be averse to that.
Representative Hornstein.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess as we move ahead and discuss this particular provision, I would really want to make sure that there's parity. There's going to be cuts, I think, across. There's going to be cuts. I mean, that's the in your bill, and so I think I would want just to make sure that as we discuss this and move forward, that there is parity, that there isn't special treatment one way or the other, because we're all dealing with limited resources here. So I guess I would just have that as a guidepost, if you will, for future discussion.
And Representative Beard.
Noted. Thank you. Yes.
Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know I'm coming back to a point, but we again, there's the Suburbans, there's Met Transit, there's Greater Minnesota Transit. And I think it's actually a three-legged stool that we're trying to deal with. But sometimes we bifurcate it into two and one or one against two. And Representative Hornstein, again, we could measure parity by funding, by cut, by service, by hours, by fares, and those would yield different results. I'm going to again say, I think for those who have no service or are losing service, the fact they got a proportional cut is of little comfort.
Representative Beard,
again,
comment. Sorry.
noted in 8 years that I've had the pleasure of serving on this committee, and it has been. It's a fascinating and pleasurable committee to serve on. This has always been the discussion, and that's why the people elect us from the various portions of the state to come here and debate these things. And I love the fact that it underscores the point that one size does not fit all, and we will allocate these things as best we can in dire times. Thank you for your comments on that.
And Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Beard. And I guess tacking on to what Representative Hornstein and Representative Morrow said, some of this is all perception, too. I know that in the community that I live in, and where the Met Council runs the bus service, there's a perception that the opt-outs are getting Taj Mahals when it comes to bus shelters and park and rides, and the people that live inside the Met Council service area are getting much less than that, including having to fight to just get a windbreak at a bus shelter, where in this opt-outs they're getting, some people want to say, Taj Mahals. And so that's a concern we have. I also have looking forward. And again, it's in dire times. It's when you make cuts, it's how that's not only it's how it actually is, but it's also the perception of how it is to the people that are that community is serving.
Representative Beard,
That I'm making a note to myself here to have a little further clarification and talking points on how the opt-outs actually are funded and how much is actually picked up by the local communities. Because I know in Scott County, the buses themselves are provided through Met Council's bonding authority. The operating money comes from a portion of the MVEST, which is set by statute, and pretty much everything else is picked up by the local taxpayers. But before I assert that with any authority, I want to be sure I have the percentages and the numbers. And again, there's 9 opt-outs. I can't speak for all of them. I only know the ones that I pay for and watch for. But it's a point well taken, and we'll talk about that more. Thank you.
Members, any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, just in summing, I want to be very clear as I'm looking at the rest of my talking points. There's 2 more points. The DE you have in front of you today is the one that was the original, it was like target number 2 that we were given as a committee to work with. However, I do know, and I think we all know, given Representative Holberg, Chair Holberg's presentation of an hour ago, that the target's going to be quite a bit different. And I don't know if members have these talking points in their packets, but I want you to be very clear. I want it to be clear to all of us that on Monday it will be a serious discussion, because the proposal is to take all of the general funds that come from the state treasury to Met Council and Minnesota DOT for transit projects and backfill them in some other ways. One is the MVEST money that's increasing and we hope continues, and the other will be, of course, the methodology that Representative Holberg was teeing up in her bill, that we statutorily dedicate some of the funds from CTIB and tee up the ability to use the livable communities and the right-of-way acquisition fund as possibilities. So just to be clear, we'll be talking about those on Monday, and those are going to change the numbers, and we'll have those posted for the committee and for the public as soon as possible.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Beard. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Beard. Chair Beard, we discussed offline a little bit about the schedule Monday. I know you touched on a little bit, but I mentioned earlier I've got folks from my community who are disabled, folks who will be taking public transit if they can, limited hours of service at night. Maybe you mentioned this and I missed it, about your willingness to maybe have some testifiers who have travel limitations to testify maybe during the day as opposed to the evening.
Well, Mr. Chairman, yes, that leads to some of my concluding remarks before we adjourn for today. And thank you again, members, for coming in on a Friday to have this hearing today. On Monday, we'll be meeting in room 5, this room, at 12:30, our normal time, where we will introduce I think, is it 11:40? Or, Mr. Chair, do you have the notes there? Could you read them? And then I'll speak to... Mr. Nisley's briefing you, let me just comment on my process for running the meeting. We will meet from 12:30 to 2:15. At that time, I'm fully anticipating we will recess. We will have discussion on the bill and on the amendments. I'm anticipating there will be other amendments as we talk about things to put into House File 1140, delete all.
And,
I will take comments. and testimony from the public who could be here. However, I would like to have the meeting reconvene about 6 o'clock because there are members of the public who can't be here until after work hours. And so we'll be here, I'm anticipating, from like 6 until 8 o'clock on Monday evening. If you could keep that time clear, that would be good. And I'm anticipating further discussion at that time. I'm anticipating during the 12:30 to 2:15 portion that we will be voting on some of the amendments. We will not vote on the entire bill, however, until after 6 o'clock. And I anticipate there may be a few more amendments after 6 o'clock that we'll discuss and have testimony from the public on. My intention is, though, that we would pass a bill out of here to the Ways and Means Committee by Monday evening within about the 8 o'clock time frame.
And members, after we recess at 2:15, we'll reconvene at 6 o'clock in room 300 South.
300 South?
Pinner South.
Wow, they must be having trouble getting big rooms for us. So, well, I'll see if I can alter that, members. I'll go look for a bigger place. Sometimes I guess you take what they can give you. So, okay.
Anyway, members, other questions, comments? Anybody in the audience would like to come down and give us a question or a comment? We'll be having the public testimony, of course, on Monday.
We will.
With Representative Morrow.
Just want to confirm, and again, this was probably already said, but I'm just being overly cautious. In terms of taking amendments, Representative, or Chair Beard, excuse me, well, certainly we're going to be meeting, we'll be meeting probably well into the afternoon here. I know there's a 24-hour rule, but I also know that amendments may come up Monday morning. You're comfortable in hearing amendments as they come on Monday?
Mr. Chair, as much as you can give, I'd appreciate it. Oral amendments or amendments of not great significance. Okay, the chair certainly will accommodate as many as we can, but amendments of significance, have those to research. If you have ideas, please notify House Research here, because these folks have families too. We've got a Saturday and a Sunday here. If you could have those in by 7 o'clock tonight, I think is the note that we've published. And then if we could get by tomorrow by 5 o'clock, if you could get them to Mr. Nisley in a little more detail or as soon as practical on Saturday, that would be great. Then we can have them ready to go on Monday, okay?
And Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess this is a process question, but I thought I understood you to say we're going to be having a new delete all. So if we're writing amendments, when are we going to see the new delete all? Should we write them to this delete all, or should we write them to the new delete all? That's the question, part of my question. And the other question I have, and get them both out at the same time, should we assume that from the what I hear there, that you're the target you're going to end up with is that all the general fund dollars that we currently get in transportation are going to be eliminated? Is that, I guess that's an assumption I'm hearing from what you said.
The second, Mr. Chairman, the second part of the question is the easy one to answer, yes. Give me just a moment on the first one, though.
Representative Beard, Mr. Burris has some input.
Mr. Chair and members, the delete all that was adopted today will serve as the base for subsequent amendments. So all the amendments on Monday will be drafted against the 811-0165 delete all. So there will be amendments to the delete all.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would, Mr. Nisley was just telling me the delete alls will all work off the one we just adopted. And the chair may have a couple of amendments to specific lines, like line 1.9 or so on. But wholesale changes are not anticipated other than to the numbers themselves.
Representative Morrow.
Then just to thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Beard, thank you. And just to make sure that I'm clear, you just mentioned a couple amendments you'll be bringing. You'll be sharing the general parameters of those amendments with us as well before Monday.
Yes, Mr. Representative Beard. Mr. Chair, I'm tapped out for today.
Okay, then we will lay this bill over till Monday at 12:15 or 12:30, excuse me. And we'll see you all back in room 5. Meeting adjourned.